It's the Mike Wills Podcast.
So with the last super long episode, I thought I would call this a nerd alert and kind of cover a little bit more into kind of how antennas, especially transmitting antennas, kind of work. Especially as you factor in the feed line and all that kind of stuff. So let's kind of start where a lot of these books usually start. The perfect antenna, in quotes, perfect antenna. It's perfect coverage in a full 365 degrees. It's a point in free space which can radiate in all directions equally. If they call it an isotropic antenna. If you've looked at anything, including like your cell phones or I don't know what you may have been exposed to with it, that transmits antennas, whatever, a lot of times they call it dBi. So that is a decibels increase over an isotropic antenna. Isotropic antenna is considered 0 dB. A dipole, which I'll get to in a minute, that's the most basic HF antenna most people can make, not that I'm not making, is a 2.13 or 2.25 or something like that dBi over a isotropic antenna. I'll cover some more of this in a minute. So that's your ideal antenna. So let's go back to this dipole I mentioned. So a dipole is really two wires, both a quarter wavelength. So let's just use 20 meters. And I'm going to keep it in metric because it's easier when I'm in the car. A 20 meter antenna, you're going to have 10 meters of wire, 5 meters on each side. On half the antenna is hooked up to your center wire in your coax. The other half is hooked up to your shielding, the foil, or usually it's some sort of a mesh that you hook up to the other side. That is your, quote, basic antenna that is used for amateur radio. There are others, but that's kind of typically shown as the most simplest and the starter for HF. But all it is wire, a way to hook them together. That's typically about it for the most basic version. So that a dipole is just a single wire, straight wire. So what happens is the ends of the wires typically don't radiate. It radiates on the sides. So you're taking away power from the ends and you're pushing it out to the sides more. So if you look at your isotropic, it's just a big sphere. Well, if you look at it from the side, they call it elevation view, in free space, so there's no land or anything, it looks like a donut. From the top, it looks like a, not really an oval, sort of an oval type shape. So you can see where your directions are going, and that is 2 dB increase. So it's 2 dB is not 2 times. My brain is not working for dB right now. 3 dB is twice as much, so 2 is slightly less than twice as much power going out than your isotropic perfect sphere antenna. Of course, an isotropic antenna is impossible to build. You cannot transmit any radio frequency on just a tiny little dot of wire. At least theoretically impossible. Who knows down the road, I suppose. So that will get you... So that is kind of the basics of an antenna. And when you say increase, basically what you're comparing against is a different antenna and how well it radiates in a certain direction or directions. So, if you haven't heard of a Yagi, I'll change it to more of the family of a beam antenna. A beam antenna, as the name kind of implies, beams energy in more of one direction. So you could have a antenna that says, let's say, 12 dBi in one direction. So now you're, let's see, 100 times. So 10 is 100 times. You're over 100 times more powerful in one direction than you are in other directions. And then there's usually some radiation out, couple different other sides that you factor in. There's some front to back, side to front ratios. We're not worried about that here. But that kind of, hopefully, that kind of pictures in your mind, you're radiating power, most of your power in one direction that allows you to go further, more directional, apply power in a certain direction, and so on. But that also means that your radiating, your effective radiation is much higher. You have a 100 watt HF radio radiating out at 100 watts. That thing is pushing out 200 watts if you exclude feed line and all that other fun stuff. Actually, over 200 watts. So that kind of, hopefully that kind of pictures in your mind how they rate these antennas. There's one other number I haven't mentioned yet. And I think it's called dBm. So this is another one that at least in amateur radio, they like to use is dBm. So now it's not compared to an isotropic antenna, that's theoretical. It's now literally comparing it against a dipole antenna. So your 12 dBi beam antenna might be a 9.85 dBm antenna. And really, that's just telling you how much more effective it is than a dipole antenna in these certain circumstances. A lot of different layers to this, but really it's just there to give you the information that you need to effectively get what you're looking for. I hope that makes sense. And then a lot of these omnidirectional antennas, just your single stick sticking out, you can gain more increase in power, or dBs of power, by narrowing down your radiation pattern. So, like I said, a dipole looks like a big donut, and on the from the side, well, from the top, that would be what your typical radio antenna in like a vehicle would be. But then, if you start to narrow that down, so instead of being a oval, it's more of a square or rectangle. Well, now you're putting power out, not up. And that's what you want. You want to make sure your power is going to where you most want to communicate. So, that is the basics of how you measure antennas. So, D dB is a logarithmic formula that's used to calculate how much power is being pushed out. And they just translate to dB because it's easier to follow. So 3 dB is twice as powerful as 0, I guess. I think 3 is doubled. 6 is, I can't remember what 6 is. 10 is 110 times power. 10 times or 100 times? I think it's 100 times the power. Anyway, I'll find some of this information, post it all out there. It's, what, just knowing the higher the number, the better, is probably appropriate enough for some cases. Where it really comes into being important is when you're trying to push out to full legal limit of a amateur radio operator. Full legal limit for an amateur radio operator in the U.S. is 1,500 watts of power. Now that's, and they call it effective radiated power. So you could have an amplifier that can put up 1,500 watts, but then you better have an isotropic antenna because you're going to be radiating too much power, potentially, in a perfect antenna system. In reality, if you're pushing out 1,500 watts from your amplifier, you have to factor in how much loss you have in your feed line. Now, I'll get to that in a minute, how that works. And then you have to figure out how much dB increase your antenna is. Now, this can be based on calculated numbers because it's really hard to figure out real-world numbers. So you model it. You can show that there's a 6 dB increase over isotropic. You punch these numbers all in, how much increase, how much decrease, and then you figure how much your effective radiated power is based on the power use you give it. So if your loss is less than how much you radiate, which is ideally, in an ideal world, how it looks, you'd have to play into that number what your radiation power of your antenna is. I hope I'm not going too deep here. And if I am, I'm producing this as a little bonus one. Like I said, heavy geekery coming up. So that is kind of antennas in a nutshell. Without diving into the whole amateur extra level of radiation, how you calculate how well it radiates. There's radiation resistance, inductance, capacitance. There's a whole bunch of different things I can throw out there, but I'm not going to throw all that out. I'm going to just mute that for now. So now let's talk about feed lines. I briefly talked about that in the last episode. How much loss a feed line has is based on what they say call the dielectric material. Well, what is a dielectric material? That is, as I am understanding it, and it wasn't 100% clear, but this is what I figure. It is the material that is wrapped around the center insulator in your coax. So in my RG58 I mentioned that I'm using now on my VHF-UHF antenna, it's RG58. It has a plasticky center. That's your dielect. Only 66% of your signal I believe it is, or approximately 66% of your signal goes through that material. So if you're putting out 100 watts, only 60 watts are making it through. And that depends on how long your run is, too. There's that other factor of how long is it? Because if it's 200 feet, well, you're going to be losing more power than that. But only 66% of your signal gets through that material. You get to something like LMR that I talked about, LMR 400. It's got a foam insulator, and I think it's 95% of your signal gets through that. I don't know what Hardline or those others are. This is just a couple examples. So, and that is called, okay, brain fart, I can't remember. Velocity factor, that's what it is. So what it's calculating out is the ratio of the speed of light in a vacuum versus the speed of light or whatever, speed of radio signals through this wire. So it slows that signal down by 5% in an LMR type scenario, causing more loss, or 66%, or 33% slower in RG58, thus you're going to get more loss that goes towards heat, and so on. So, how does this all factor into what I talked about with antennas last time, and how they shape signals? Well, because you know how fast the signal goes through a wire, a given wire, you can now start to put calculations to this. And some of the things I talk about in the extra test is how electrically long is a piece of wire if it's blah, 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 blah at this frequency. So you start backtracking. And this is how I did it. I know this isn't how they taught you to do it, but they give you a frequency. So first figure out what band that is. Let's just say it's 40 meter band. Well, and so then they're saying it's a quarter wave or quarter length, quarter wave length of coax. And they want to know how long. They want to know how long it is if it's a quarter wave at 7 megahertz or something like that. How long do you want to cut it? Yeah, that's what it was. Sorry. I'm still trying to remember. So in one case, it's like at 7 something megahertz, how long is a quarter wave piece of wire electrically long? Or they want to know how long the wire is for an electrically long at 7 or quarter wave at 7 megahertz or something like that. So what they're wanting to know is not how long it should be, because 7 megahertz is 40 meters, so it should be a 10 meter long piece to be a quarter wave, except we're dealing with wire. A wire slows it down, so it's no longer a quarter wave. You have to make it a little bit long or shorter to make it electrically long. So electricity sees things as one length, or electricity / RF sees things at one length. Physically, it's another length. I hope this is making sense. This is extra material. or amateur extra level material that I'm talking about this particular milling. But knowing that, it's kind of neat. Because now you can start to think about a lot of different ways of, well, phasing your antennas, like I mentioned earlier, so that you're feeding your antennas at the exact right moment so that it radiates the way you want to. And there's a whole list of different things in the book. Adjust your rating pattern. It's kind of neat once you kind of start seeing how you can start doing some of this stuff. I seen a video here last week, I think. Yeah, it might have been last week. This guy was like, okay, here's what I'm thinking about. I want three vertical antennas in a triangle, certain wavelength apart. I want to phase this as such that it radiates primarily in a certain direction. And so he modeled this, kind of showing you what he wants. But then he's like, okay, I want to be able to control this through a control panel so that I just turn a switch and say, I want to go southwest. What do I need in order to make that work? So he really literally wants to build an antenna as three vertical antennas, and that doesn't take up a lot of space but is highly directional. These antennas can be on the ground, where typically your beam antennas, the higher up, the better to a point. Because the higher up you get beam antennas, the angle that it fires off is lower. All of this stuff is stuff you learn in amateur radio as you dive more and more into it. These things factor into how a person that wants to hit very distant stations or are heavy into contesting and trying to hit the most stations, or there's a lot of different factors someone might be doing this, but you're talking hundreds or even thousands of dollars in equipment to make this work. More money than I have, that's for sure. Slight side note, and I think most of you can probably get where I'm coming from on this. I'm on a lot of amateur radio groups on Facebook, and every once in a while I will see a person come on, said, I don't have my license, I'm looking to buy this $3,500 radio, that's an HF radio. Is this a good one to get, or should I get this other $5,000 radio? I'm like, dude, how much freaking money you have you can just throw out a $2,500 radio, or $3,500 radio, I think it is. You know, that's just the radio. Now you need a power supply to power it for a couple hundred bucks. You need antennas to run it. That's another, if you buy them. You know, you're $4,000 or $5,000 into this thing, and you haven't even have your license yet. Seriously? I wish I had your money throw around, because I was lucky I could buy a $50 radio when I first started. And I've kind of slowly built up from there. So, you know, saving side jobs, Christmas, birthdays, all that stuff to buy all these things. It's pretty much what I did. And I'm sure most of you would be in kind of that same boat and not necessarily say, okay, I'm diving into amateur radio. Here's $10,000. What can I get? The other thing I I can see a little more, but people are buying $500, $600, $700 handheld radios. And I kind of think the same thing as, wow, I wish I had your money, because that's not what I would spend $500 on if I had that to start out with. I'd go with a mobile radio at that point. Don't get me wrong, those $500 handhelds, they are really good. You get what you pay for. But you may not have the best... might not have the best experience depending on where you're at. Now, if you're downtown New York, you might need that more expensive radio so that it you can actually talk out. There's so much radio frequencies in New York City, it's just hard to talk, period. But you get to southern Minnesota, you know, you maybe 30, 40 miles from the nearest repeater, period. You're going to need something that can get out there. I'm lucky I'm in a populated area, but not everyone's as lucky. So, these are things that drive me a little crazy, and maybe it's just jealousy, I don't know. But, be able to drop that much ching on a radio right off the bat before you even have your license. You don't even know if you're passed yet and you're spending money like no tomorrow. And again, who knows? I'm not them. That's their problem. Probably jealousy. So, I think I covered what I want to. Electrically long is important to know when doing certain things. Not all the time. You know, a lot of time you don't need to worry about that unless you're more into the construction of radios and stuff. If you're one of those people who would rather buy and just hook up, most of the time you should have very little problems. HF gets to be kind of interesting if you're not paying close attention. That's about the only one that's really potentially a problem. And it'll be interesting when I get on HF to see what kind of stuff I will pull, what kind of interference I'll have and whatnot that I may or may have to take care of or clean up. The HF, HF radios are very sensitive. They pull, or they can potentially pull, I don't remember what the theoretical was, 170, minus 173 dB, which is like millivolts of radio signals they can pull, potentially, depending on the models. The cheaper, a little bit cheaper ones are a little less sensitive than the more expensive ones, but ultimately, they are very sensitive. The VHF, UHF, they're not quite as sensitive. They don't... they're not necessarily what you call weak signal. There's two different modes of VHF, UHF type radios. One is your standard mobile, it does FM, might receive on AM or something, but other than that, usually that's about it. There is also another level of VHF, UHF radios that are designed for what they call weak signal. Those will do other modes. I'll just to eliminate confusion. They do other modes that are typically much weaker signal. You use something like that to bounce signals off the moon. Yeah, you can bounce radio signals off the moon. You can bounce radio signals off of auroras, northern lights, basically. You can bounce them off of meteor It's not the meteors themselves, the meteor tails. You know, kind of the dust and stuff that it releases as it goes by. You can bounce radio signals off of that. All kind of really neat little processes you can do. And then another fun thing you can do with really any, even your little handheld radios, is satellite work. You can talk to satellites that are, you know, up in space, basically. Satellite space, yeah. And there you don't need much power. It's not about the power. It's about the kind of the directional of the antenna that you can use to talk to other amateurs. It's kind of neat. I've seen people seen that on videos, on that. I want to try it at some point. But you got to be on your game when you do that. Because those go fast. One guy I watched, he said, you know what? I don't even try to record this stuff. I will watch the video later and I will record it down because it just goes so fast. What they do is, yeah, there's another long one. Sorry about that. Going off topic of what I want to do, but it's kind of fun stuff, and I'm bored. Should be listening to podcasts, but rather talk, I guess. So that what happens is when the satellite is going, pretty much you give your call sign and your grid square. So it's a Maidenhead grid, I think it's called. So my location is EN24XD. That's what you would kind of give out. And then there are satellite people that go up and try and work every grid. At least in every U.S. or whatever. So, I mean, it's satellite. You have quite the range on it. You could potentially work several hundred miles in any direction. And then there are competitions where people will drive to another grid just to get help, give other people those... Whoa! I was dodging a dead animal in the middle of the road. There's competitions for getting grid squares and all that stuff. There is radio sport, and there is just amateur radio having fun. Radio sport is competitions, and that's where the big money usually goes, where people spend big money in order to win these competitions. I think I do some contesting, a little, you know, have a little fun, but I'm not usually overly competitive. And I don't think I'd ever, you know, with what I would potentially have, I don't think I'd ever win. But yeah, you give your call sign and your grid square. You get that from the other guy. That's your contact. And you move on to the next one. One contact may last 20, 30 seconds is all it is. Assuming they copy the first time. It is fast-paced. It is very interesting, and you have multiple people all talking at the same time. If at some point I ever get to that point of doing it, I will totally record it because it is interesting, to say the least. And again, there, you just need a little, you can use a $30 radio. You can build a beam antenna or a Yagi antenna for, well, if you have an old tape measure laying around, you use that and some PVC pipe. And some of you may even have that laying around, depending on who you are. Or you just go buy some. It's, you know, dirt cheap. They cost you all of, okay, if you've got to buy a tape measure, $20 maybe. Not counting coax. Which, if you buy any at some point, you can just... All you need is something long enough so you can hold it and and use it. It can be 5 feet. It's all you need. So, amateur radio is about doing things as cheaply as possible, except your radios. But there, once you get one, assuming it's a decent one, you can start experimenting to see if you can't get your signal further and different ways and all that kind of fun stuff. Wow, another 35-minute one. I can talk radio all day right now because that's where my head's been for quite a while. Weather's been kind of going downhill a little bit in interest, but I got to get that back. I got to start figuring out how to predict storms and look at that stuff. That's kind of my next goal. And once I can kind of sort of, not 100% predict, but get start getting in your head just kind of those easy points, easy, you know, you can look at it and say, oh, looks like storms today. Oh, it looks like they might be in this area. Yeah, the National Weather Service will tell you, but it's kind of fun just trying to see what you can do yourself. And that's kind of where I want to go, but I don't know if I'll get there or not. My brain can only process so much stuff at a time, and right now I'm stuck on radio. That's okay. Gotta have hobbies for when you retire, because otherwise you're gonna be bored doing nothing. I won't be bored, I will tell you that. So, again, super long one. I think I'm going to call it wraps. I hope that gives you at least a little bit of a summary of how antennas work, how antennas are, how they kind of, kind of how they work, how they're built a little bit. And how feed lines work. I didn't really go into depth details about how they shape them and stuff, but it's possible to shape your signal using different lengths of feed line and causing your radio signal to just stay in the wire just a little bit longer. You know, there's a lot of fun stuff you can do with that in order to achieve whatever goal you're trying to achieve. So, thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate you listening, and I'm going to shut up now. 73 to you, this is WX0MIK, and I'm clear.
The intro music was Funkily Dugatitude by the late Derek K. Miller. The outro is Always Evermore by Eric Dietrich. You can contact me on most social networks with the username Mike Wills, one word. You can email me at mike@mikewills.me. You can find any show notes and my blog at mikewills.me. Thank you for listening, and come back again.